and this is my impression of me arguing with an old-timey Southern lawyer in a courtroom. Objection! You can't show my clients' rates to your customers! We compare our Progressive Direct rate and our competitors' rates in one place, so shopping is easier. Only showing your rate when it's lowest! Slander in the court of law! No, we show our rate even when Progressive isn't the lowest. I rest my case! Move to adjourn for snack time!
Compare rates and save at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations.
This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at EquestrianLegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails, blessed trails.
Welcome to Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, as well as gospel, patriotic music, and songs that just plain lift your heart, most all of them with a definite Western flair. Today's guest is not your typical Western musician. In fact, there is nothing typical about him. He's actually what we like to call a bluesy cowboy with a Western slant to a lot of what he does. So without further ado, let's get a taste of his music with A Cowboy Waltz.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. That was so, I wanted to dance. I wish my husband was here. Oh, my gosh. Reading our guest's bio is a hoot. His life is an amazing patchwork of experiences and vocations that are punctuated with things like being involved with a Grammy Award nominated project and receiving prestigious awards like the Blues Foundation's Keeping the Blues Alive Award in Education. He is also recognized as an alumni with distinction from Northern Arizona University. His music can be found on television shows and movie soundtracks, and he is prominently featured in a Keeping the Blues Alive award-winning harmonica documentary film called Pocketful of Soul. His music has afforded him the pleasure of traveling the world and the honor of sharing the stage with some of his heroes like the legendary Pine Top Perkins, and also with some celebrity musicians like Queen Latifah, of all people, Bruce Willis, and Dennis Quaid. That was so fun to read that. But it is work with children that really captures my heart and has elevated my respect for this cowboy. I am so excited to welcome to our show America's harmonic cowboy, Gary Allegretto. Thank you, Gary, for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Belinda. It's an honor.
Oh, it's so, I've been really looking forward to this. And so, I mean, I to me, the harmonica is synonymous with the cowboy, and it's so cool that there's someone of your level of expertise and talent that's doing cowboy music with it, as well as your incredible blues. But we'll talk about that later. But I really want to find out more about Gary Allegretto. We see you at festivals, and, you know, we hug, and hi, how are you? And we talk a little bit in green rooms, but it's always like ships passing in the night. I've never really gotten to sit down and really get to know you, and this is really fun. I'm having already read a bunch of stuff about you I didn't know that we're going to talk about, and it's just going to be fun. So let's start at the beginning. Where were you born, and when you grew up, what was your life like?
Well, I could go on and on about what my life is like, because as you said, it's been a real adventure and a wonderful ride, and I feel really blessed. It all started for me the way it does with a lot of cowboys on the East Coast, actually.
Wow.
You know, I was born in Delaware, and okay. I didn't stay there long because I was dreaming about the West. But, you know, there's people like Don Edwards, who was born in New Jersey, and there's all the Western, practically all the Western heroes that we grew up with are all East Coasters. You know, with the westward expansion, everybody moved west by choice, and same with me, same story with me. I moved west by choice. It was something I always dreamed about and always wanted to do. I had the Rocky Mountains posted all over my room, and pictures of cowboys, and my room had a very strong western theme, which I think my brother didn't really find all that comforting for him, but because I shared a room with my brother, so there was a distinct line between. Yeah, there was a distinct line between our sides of the room, and we kept it that way. But I always dreamed of the West. I played cowboy music on my turntable, and learned to play it on the harmonica. You know, long before I was learning to play blues, I was playing, you know, standard cowboy songs. And, you know, so it was, and I was always, my backyard was, you know, just yards from a cornfield, and there was woods all over my neighborhood, and I was always out getting dirty, you know, in the streams and ponds and fishing. And my friend had a pony that I used to ride, and I had a girlfriend with a pony that I used to ride, and it was, you know, just always about dreaming about the West. And even before I was old enough to leave home, I ran away from home with permission, and hired on to a whitewater rafting tour in western Pennsylvania. I was a river guide on a rafting tour, and I had to hitchhike 500 miles to get there. So that gives you a lot of insight to who I was, the way I was even as a child.
Oh my goodness. Well, now before we go much further, I know I wanted to get in, because this is basically kind of a gospel show, although I keep that really loose and comfortable for everyone. But I know that I did not grow up in church. And, I mean, a lot of people did, a lot of people didn't. So what was, I know that you're a believer and that you have a wonderful relationship with the Lord, but is that something that was fostered in your childhood or something that you grew to embrace as you got older?
Well, both. When I was raised, I was a churchgoer. I was brought up Roman Catholic, and I went to church, and I went to even what they called CCD catechism on the weekends, mm-hmm. and you know, Sunday school, and something happened as I got older, you know, granted, I'm a very independent-minded person, but I started realizing that my relationship with God wasn't in that church so much as it was within me, and mm-hmm. and especially when I was out in natural environments, like being in the woods and being, you know, out on canoe and out in the mountains, and you know, the places I love the most, and where I could find quiet and mm-hmm. reflect and turn to God and look for answers. And that's always been my church, if you will, is to mm-hmm. find those quiet moments and in natural places, and not so much man-made organizations and man-made structures. It's, to me, it's always mm-hmm. been about nature. And mm-hmm. and you know, I'll also say that it's been about music. I find that when I turn into music, I really, really, it's a spiritual thing for me. And it has become even more so by helping others with it.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I know that there's a lot of, you know, wonderful churches and organizations that do really good work and do really good things. But I think it's also very important that people understand the difference between, you know, what man has created and what the relationship that the Lord really wants us to have with him on a very personal and individual basis. And you've really kind of said that very clearly. And I'm with you. I mean, I don't know how you could walk in the Rocky Mountains and not just be overwhelmed with the presence of the Lord. It's just amazing. It really, really is. So
yeah.
That is the coolest thing.
I totally agree with you. I there's a lot of contradictions and hypocrisy and man-made stuff, and I
right.
don't see that in nature. Don't see
nope.
any of that in nature. I've found that, you know, if you listen and if you pay attention, God will steer you to the right places, and
exactly.
that's where he steered me.
Exactly. Yeah. It's well, I want to know, I read that you received your first harmonica when you were 5 years old. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was roughly about that time in my life. My grandpa was a harmonica player and a accordion player and a big woodsman, big fella. And he worked in a pulpwood yard, loading pulp logs onto pallets of trains. And you can imagine that made him a rather big guy, because he did this by hand. They weren't using back end, you know, front end loaders and all that. He would load pallets by hand all day onto trains. And he had a stroke on the job that left him paralyzed, and they didn't expect him to live through it, but he did live through it. And when I was a kid, he was listening to me play on a plastic toy harmonica, and with painstakingly went to his room, and the stroke had left him unable to speak or walk without a cane and a brace. Went mm-hmm. to his room and opened his drawer and took out his Hohner Chromonica, which is a nice, very nice chromatic harmonica, and mm-hmm. brought it to me and handed it to me. And though he couldn't tell me what that meant, I knew what it meant. And
mm-hmm.
That was, you might say, that day I found my whole purpose for being on Earth, right underneath my nose,
mm-hmm.
literally right under my nose with the harmonica. And mm-hmm. that's when I started really taking the harmonica seriously and playing it.
Wow.
And I've been playing it ever since. And I still have that harmonica.
Wow, he passed the torch to you, did he not?
That's I think, you know, quite literally he passed it to me, and and I took it to heart, and it's been there for me ever since. I find a lot of solace in playing harmonica. Sometimes if I'm going through some hard times, just holding it in my hand can get help me get through. And it's become a symbol and, you know, an actual instrument of comfort and solace for me. So that made a big difference in my life. So my purpose for being here, right underneath my nose.
Well, I really love you. You've done a wonderful thing of incorporating a very bluesy style with cowboy music, and it's just this wonderful melding of two kinds of music. But I was really fascinated with the story about the day you discovered Big Walter Horton, and I didn't even know who that guy was because I'm not a blues aficionado, so I looked him up, and what a cool dude. But can you tell us about that? I thought that was a cool story.
Well, you know, maybe later in our conversation, I'd like to expand on blues and cowboy music because they aren't really two different genres. You know, there are two different genres, but the people would be surprised to find out how closely related they are.
We'll explore that.
I think you know, people would be interested in knowing that cowboy music actually came in its earliest origins from the blues, but. Big Walter Horton was playing at a festival that I was at when I was a kid, and my parents took me, you know, to this festival, and you know, they were looking at, you know, some kind of probably, you know, flowers or crafts or something like that, and I heard the sound, and I just wandered off to hear it, and that's where they found me. Lost me and found me in front of this big black fella with his electric band playing this sound that I just couldn't believe was coming out of that harmonica. And, you know, with an amplified harmonica and a blues band from Chicago. And I'd never heard anything like that. And that was a sound I just had to know more about and investigate. And I did, in fact, investigate the blues from that point on. And luckily where I grew up, it was a very cultural area. So there was bluegrass and blues and folk music. And, you know, it was also a very cultural time period for music. It wasn't, there weren't as many walls put up then as there are now between music genres, and so I could hear Piedmont style blues and bluegrass and all that stuff. And it was actually on a farm near my house. On Tuesdays they would have all different kinds of music. They had cowboy and they had all traditional American music, and it turned me on to a lot of different styles and genres, and also it educated me on how really closely tied together they all are.
Mm-hmm.
And the common denominator being the blues.
Wow. That's interesting. Well, I loved on the story how you said that you were, I just had to mention this because that was hilarious. While the loudspeaker is trying to locate this lost child, you're just oblivious and just lost in the music. And that was the cutest vision.
You read that bio, okay? Yeah, they were searching for me, and they found me right there in front of the bandstand with these guys playing this sound that I couldn't tear myself away from. So, yeah, as they were blasting, you know, Gary Allegretto, and Parents Are Looking for You and all that, and you know, actually, I wasn't lost; I was quite found. Right there.
We were quite found in so many ways. Oh gosh. Yep. Well, we're going to do a song here in just a second, but just before we do the song, I just have to touch on the fact that you graduated from college summa cum laude. I did not know you were such a brainiac.
Oh, I believe me, I am not, but I have no aversion to hard work. I worked hard in college, and I loved my studies. I studied forestry, and I went to Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. Again, moving west as soon as I could, and it's one of the finest forestry schools and natural resource education schools and management schools in the country. So I set to work getting a Bachelor of Science there, and I accomplished that, I guess, with gold stars. You know, I'm a stubborn man, and when I set my mind to do something, I don't go halfway with it. I go all the way. So, and I love the studies, and I love what I was studying, and the Flagstaff area, and we'll talk more about the effects that had on me as far as when I became a hotshot and forest ranger and all that, and doing research for the Forest Service. But anyway, I really still carry Flagstaff around with me wherever I go, and some of my favorite memories were there in Flagstaff, studying forestry in the Northern Arizona University, and they did make me a alumni of distinction. Crazy story, but they called me and said, look, we want to put you up on campus, have banners of you up on campus as alumni of distinction. Can you send us a picture? And I said, are you kidding me? That's like unheard of. And they said, no, we want to have your banner flying around campus along with a former governor of Arizona and the president of Qualcomm Industries and all that. And sure enough, they did that, and they were up there for several years, about 5 years. They had me. I was slapped in the wind in Flagstaff. I had to go see it, so I went out there to see it, and it just blew my mind, to be honest. And I had to tell them, look, I really appreciate this honor, but did you guys know that I was on disciplinary probation for half of my college years? So,
too outspoken.
And they said, no, we didn't know that. I said, well, you're not going to take the banners down, are you?
That's funny. Oh, and obviously they didn't, not for 5 years anyway.
Not only that, they still got me on their website as a mentor, and means a lot. Yeah, it's nice.
It should. Well, we're going to do another one of your songs right now. Tell us about Never the Same.
Never the Same is actually a lot of what I just spoke of in the reference to my grandfather and giving me my first harmonica. And there's a reference to a fellow named John Jackson, a famous blues man who played Piedmont country-style blues. And he played on the farm that I mentioned when I grew up, and had a big influence on me, hearing that acoustic Piedmont sound. And he would play slide guitar with his pocket knife, which just blew me away.
Wow. And,
he would use his pocket knife on the neck and get that amazing slide sound. And then there was Bill Monroe, who invented bluegrass. Yeah. Yeah, I saw him there too. And and I guess the song is about music making my life never the same, as I mentioned when we were talking about it. But also, it's about, as I mentioned, it all being tied together. American music's all tied together, with the common denominator being the blues, and that includes cowboy music, and it includes bluegrass, and it includes folk, and even rock and roll and jazz and all that. So we'll talk about that later, but that's where this song came from. And,
well, let's listen to Never the Same.
Yeah.
Long ago and far away, as a child I heard my grandpa Fiore play. I said I heard my grandpa play. Long ago
pop your replay. And I knew my world was never gonna be the same. Further down the road, in my young life, I heard John Jackson play guitar with a pocket knife. I said, with a pocket knife. Jackson played the blues with a pocket knife. And I knew my world was never gonna be the same.
Especially knowing the story behind it. That was great. So now let's talk about you being a forest ranger. I really want to hear about this.
Okay, well, right there in Flagstaff's where that happened, after the school session would end in the summers, everybody would be looking for summer work. And so naturally, the work I looked for was with the Forest Service. I'll remember the day when I got the letter saying that I was accepted to work for the Forest Service as a FPT, Fire Prevention Technician, and I remember how thrilled I was. It was just to get hired on by the Forest Service in the West. That was a dream of mine, and I remember the day it happened, and I remember the excitement I felt from that. And I'm here to tell you that was probably one of my most favorite jobs I've ever had. I often felt like I should have been paying them to do it rather than vice versa. And it was really, really amazing. I couldn't believe that they issued me a 4x4 truck with a pumper on the back of it, and basically gave me a map and a radio and said, "Okay, kid, go drive and go explore. Here's the forest and go explore it." And
wow.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, you know, technically I wasn't supposed to be out there exploring all day, but that's what it ended up being doing. And, I was there on call in case something happened or not. I had to make public contacts with campers and hikers and all that. But oh man, what an amazing job! And to just some of the, I don't know if your listeners have ever been to the Coconino National Forest, but it is one of the most beautiful places on earth. It's just absolutely gorgeous. The Kachina Peaks, which used to be called the San Francisco Peaks, because they said that you could see San Francisco from the top, which of course isn't true.
Right.
The early explorers, that's how it got that name, the San Francisco Peaks. It's just a unbelievably beautiful group of mountains and volcanoes, and it stretches out into the Sunset Crater National Park and then on out into the Painted Desert and all the way down, you know, that's to the north and then the south down to Sedona. And that whole area was my patrol. So I just, you know, talk about being close to God. It was spiritual to me, and I just will never forget it, and I carry it with me wherever I go. It was just truly an amazing experience. I really cherish it. It's when I go back there, it's spiritual to me. I always go back there and revisit it and take time to be alone there and reflect on it and you know, thank God for being so blessed in my life like that. So it was truly a blessing. And then let's talk about hot shotting.
I was going to ask you how that evolved.
Well, the natural progression for an adventurer like myself would be to, you know, I was fighting fires as a ranger, but they were often lightning strikes, and they were small because I just had my pumper. You know, I had the gallon, 500-gallon pump tank on the back of my Model 20 truck. But, you know, so they would call me, and I would go head out on that and find fires and put them out either solo or with a crew member. But the big fires were getting put out by the hot shots, and I wanted that adventure. I wanted to experience that. So I applied to the hot shot crew, and in my opinion, and I'm sure the other shots of the day would probably concur, the Mormon Lake hot shots were the most respected crew on the Coconino, and so I applied to them, and I got hired. And again, I remember how excited I was to have that experience and be hired by a hot shot crew. You know, for the folks who are listening who don't know about hotshot crews,
I was just
they're the elite firefighters.
What did they do? What did you guys do? Because I was a lot of, until I moved to Prescott, and we'll talk more about that in just a second, but I did not really, I'd never heard the term hotshot. I didn't even know what they did. So enlighten our listeners as to what a hotshot crew does.
Yeah, I always crack up because when I say I was a hotshot, people laugh and think I'm bragging. In a way, I am. In a way, I am, because the term hotshot is like a braggart type term, but
right.
It's actually the actual term used for wildland firefighters. They are an elite crew of about 20 guys, give or take, and they are the crews that take on the big fires and the nasty fires that are burning out of control. And they're the guys that they call, and they get there either by helicopter or by hiking in, and they put out fires. And to be on a hotshot crew is a real honor and privilege. And you work together and you train hard, and they're the best of the best. You know, that's along with the smoke jumpers, who are, you know, are jumping out of planes. So that's, you know, also pretty amazing too, but hotshot crews are the go-to guys to put out fires. They're the specialist crews,
right? And so a typical day when you're if you're as a hotshot, when you're out fighting a fire, what do you literally do? I mean, fight fires is a more of a vague idea, and people can come up with all kinds of things in their mind as to what that might look like. But what would a day as a hotshot look like?
Well, if you were on a fire, it would be intense. I'll talk about that in a second. But I got to also say, hotshots, because fires aren't burning all the time, they also do a lot of maintenance around the shop. Maintaining tools and also doing thinning operations to for prevention purposes. Mm-hmm. Fire prevention is even more important than fighting fires. To prevent fires. So a lot of times, because of the exclusion of fires in the West for so long, a lot of the forests are growing in big thickets. We call them dog hair thickets. And so mm-hmm. hotshots will go out and thin those areas and then, stack, we call it stack and sticks, stack the logs that we cut, and then in the fall when it's safe, burn them in a controlled burning situation. So a lot of what hotshots do is preventative for forest fires, which is, as I say, extremely important. Yes. When a fire hits, though, then everything gets dropped and you're on your way to a fire. And the excitement right. that goes along with that is unmatched. The excitement that when you get a call, everybody just stops dead in their tracks and their heads, shoot up and their ears perk. And it's like, we got a fire, boys, get in the truck and right. we're off. And then we may be flying to another state. We often flew up north to Montana, Wyoming, or Utah, it might be right there in our own home state in Arizona. So we would get in the bus and drive to a spot, or we would go to the Pulliam Airport in Flagstaff and get a helicopter there. So there was all kinds of different ways we'd get there, but when we got there, we hit the ground running. And to fight a fire, folks who don't know about how it works, you do a thing called digging line, and that's creating a line around the fire, generally at the head of the fire to cut it off so that it can't burn past that perimeter. And mm-hmm. that's cutting down to the dirt soil and so that no organic material can burn. And so you're making basically a sidewalk size line around the fire, maybe a double wide sidewalk size line around the fire, and then crossing your fingers that it won't cross it. Oftentimes mm-hmm. it does, and oftentimes it gets nasty as fire creates its own weather and wind, mm-hmm. and it is a sight to behold, a forest fire. As dangerous and devastating as it is, I have to tell you that it's one of the most beautiful things you can see in your life.
Wow.
Fires are incredibly beautiful, and fires are a part of natural environment, part of God's creation, and they have a purpose. The problem is that man's intervention by excluding fires so much and building in places where they shouldn't be has made a big problem for mankind. Mm-hmm.
Much more dangerous.
But fire is part of nature and part of the beauty of the natural environment and natural world. Yeah. Trees have adapted to fire long before there were people on the earth, there was fire.
Right.
So trees have adapted to it, and ecosystems have adapted to it and depend on fire.
Right.
So it's very interesting. All that said, because of the nature of man's involvement with the living in places possibly where they shouldn't be, and also for altering forests, they become a serious issue, and unfortunately tragedies happen.
They do. And before we move on to that, I do know that a couple of things. I remember when I was went to Yosemite Valley, and for the first time was blown away by that, but the natives that lived there, the Native Americans that lived there, they said that they would live there during the summer and they would leave in the winter. But before they would leave, they would set fires to burn all of the brush away so that it wouldn't build up and create a bad forest fire. So they would literally set these fires as they would leave, and it would just burn all the ground stuff. And when I was up there, there was a flower that I found I had never seen in the mountains, and they said that it takes fire, the seed being hit by fire to make it germinate. So you would only see that particular flower after there'd been a forest fire, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. But
That is fascinating, and that's called serotonous. Yeah, there's also serotonous pine cones that only open up and release seed when a fire comes through. For example, the sequoia cones and all that, the trees have adapted to resist fire and actually depend on it for propagation.
Wow. Isn't that something?
It's pretty amazing.
It is. Well, obviously, that is an incredibly dangerous job, and I would imagine that you all had to be in beyond incredible condition, physical condition, to be able to, you know, not only strenuously hike in or be dropped into these areas where you're working, but then to literally clear away all of, I mean, anybody who's dug in a garden or, I mean, knows what kind of work that is, and you are rapidly creating a swath of just soil, just exposing, clearing away everything down to the soil for, I mean, a big wide swath, and that is just amazing work. And we're coming up on, I live in Prescott, Arizona, and we are coming up on the 30th of June, which is the anniversary of a horrible tragedy, not only for our community, but for the fire service in general, and the world took it on as their own tragedy, and that was the death of the Granite Mountain Hotshots, the 19, and I didn't expect to get emotional.
You know what? I'm right with you. I'm right there with you. Whenever somebody brings up those fellows and you know their heroic tragedy, I get a little choked up too, and so I understand.
Oh, you know, and I went to the memorial the temporary memorial. I haven't seen the permanent one yet, but the temporary memorial they had in Yarnell, which is the Yarnell Hill Fire, is what it was technically called, and they had pictures of all of these young men. I mean, and young men. The oldest was in his early 30s. The youngest was like 18. Many of these people were born and raised in Prescott, and I know their family members. And when I walked around and looked at those pictures and read their stories and heard of them, it was such a tragedy, such a horrible tragedy to lose those guys.
When you work on a crew, they become family. And I mean, you'll don't get me wrong, you'll be at each other's throats some days, and the last person you want to see is the rest of your crew. You know, last people you want to see some days. But man, you become so close because you depend on each other. And you're all, you know, like-minded in that you all want to be there to fight fires. You become brothers and sisters these days. When I was fighting fires, there were no women on the crew, and I don't think there were any on the Granite Mountain crew. But
there weren't. There weren't.
Yeah, but you become a family unit, and it's like losing family, and every time I think about it, I start, you know, tearing up about, you know, thinking about that could have been me and my crew, you know, and it's, you know, these guys were heroes, and it just breaks my heart, you know.
Yeah. Well, we certainly want to honor them as that anniversary is rolling rapidly towards us, and continue to hold their families in prayer. I just recently got to have coffee with one of the widows, and she's moving on with her life, but it's still very much, you know, a part of her life, and she's still, you know, grappling with the fallout from that. And then the young man, I can't remember his name right now, the lone survivor, because he was, you know, the designated lookout on that particular day. I can only imagine, you know, what he must be, you know, still feeling. You know, why did I make it? You know, why wasn't I with them? And so just continued prayers for the family and then the lone survivor of that tragedy would be appreciated very, very, very much, very much. Oh, well, I think I'm ready for some music. So, would you please tell us about Settle Down Blues? And thank you for your service as a hotshot. That is, you know, really life-threatening work on a daily basis. And thank you so much for being willing to take on that very, very dangerous job for all of the rest of us in the beautiful forests.
Thank you. Like I say, it was a privilege for me and a pleasure. And there were often times where I wondered how I got so lucky, just to be on a crew, on a hotshot crew, with you know, guys like that, you know, standing down fire, you know. And
right.
You know, another thing I just wanted to mention before we get off that subject is that, you know, we don't have water when we do that. The only water is falling from slurry plains. So that can give you an idea how intense it is. We rarely are able to tap into any water and actually used, you know, and we're in such remote areas that, you know, engines and pumper units are pretty scarce to be able to use.
It's just clearing brush and hoping that it doesn't jump the brake that you've just cleared. Yep.
That and burning back to the fire, you know, you sometimes control the fuel by actually using fire to fight fire.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, incredible work.
So,
thank you so much.
Well, again, it's, you know, sometimes I think I should have been paying them to do that work.
Well, let's get to some music.
So comedy relief. Comedy relief here. My next song, the next song up is.
We need it.
It certainly is. It's Settle Down Blues is sort of my philosophy about staying independent and single. And
alrighty.
It sort of speaks for itself, but I remember when I wrote it, and people listening to it, they said, "Oh my God, you wrote your song."
So we're going to get to know Gary Allegretto a little better with this song, it sounds like. So let's listen to Settle Down Blues.
1, 2, 3. Ain't two things that made me nervous about that term, settle down. Well, that first word is settle, and that second one is down. Ain't about to settle, I got too much to lose. Ain't about to go down with those settle down blues. On the day that I was born, I knew the world was my poor child. I just hit the ground up running, I never aimed to stop. Yeah, I'm still running, you can blame it all on my shoes. I gotta keep on moving, running for the settle down blues. My grandma once told me, see the world while you can. You got plenty of time to be an old married man. I took the wisdom, Lord, to be the truth, and it's kept me far away from them settle down blues. Saying, find a woman you can trust. Why don't you finally marry and be miserable like us? You know that life you live ain't the one I choose. I ain't swapping my happiness for your settle down blues. Well, don't assume I'm lonely, cause I love my solitude. I can have me some company any old time I'm in the mood. Try not to worry about me, cause I ain't gonna worry about you when you're all alone with your settle down blues. And if you don't want me around, you can count on one hand number of minutes before I'm taking off again. Don't wear out welcomes, don't get me confused with that kind of man who gets them settled down blues. Sold for a dollar, you won't get it back again. You might get wealthy, but brother, you'll pay your dues. Trade your freedom in for them settle-down blues. When I'm out on the road, you know I'm as happy as a clam. You ain't never gonna
hear me apologize for who I am. Call me a dreamer, call me any damn thing you choose. You can call me when you feel low with them settle down blues. Yeah. But I'm proud to pay the cost. Not everyone that wanders wanders cause they're lost. I'll go my own way down any old road to choose. I'm traveling far away from the settle down blues. Going down the highway, just living life as I choose. I'm traveling far away from the settle down blues.
I always wondered why you were still single. Now I know.
Yeah, that explains a lot, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you're just a little rogue, you are.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was kind of surprised you invited me to be on the show, because I think my reply was I marched down an untrodden path quite a bit of
yes,
the time.
Yes, you do. Well, you know what? I mean, not to sound irreverent, but in his day, Jesus walked down a very untrodden path. Everything he did was counterintuitive to everything that was acceptable behavior in the moment. So there's nothing wrong with walking down your own path. There is nothing wrong with that.
Well, I think God put us here all for our own specific individual reason,
our job. I could not agree with you more.
Yeah, our job is to find that purpose, and I think I'm on my way to find mine if I haven't already.
I think you're right on your path, and it's really awesome. Well, let's talk. We're going to switch to music now, and I did notice that you actually worked as a working cowboy for a short while. And so let's talk about that. And then also, I really do want you to share with us the connection between the harmonica and harmonica music and cowboy.
I would love to. And I also want to talk about harmonica kids. So I'm going to try to.
Oh, yeah. No, we are absolutely going to get that in. Yes. We have plenty of time. We're online. We can go over. We're online.
Okay.
We're good.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah, because I can be long-winded. Once you get me going, I'm generally a quiet man, but once you get me going, I can talk forever. But the first part of that was refresh my memory, Belinda. You asked
working at the working cowboy. You actually worked as a cowboy for a while.
Yes. So living in northern Arizona, I had a lot of friends. Particularly in forestry school and all that, friends who were from ranches. And so I got to, be ranch hands, unofficial ranch hand on a lot of those guys' ranches that they lived on and worked on. So I also had a boss when I moved to Santa Fe after college. I had a boss who had a ranch. So I was cheap labor for him to fix fences and round up horses and do all that. So I got to experience all that side of life, and I also have friends up in Durango, Colorado, the Wilderness Trails Ranch, which I understand was just sold, but is a beautiful ranch on Biosito Lake in outside of Durango, Colorado. Some of my best friends, I basically call them family because we've become that close. And so whenever I was up there, I'd be chasing cows with them and doing ranch hand work with them. And then my buddy P.V. Bonham up in Laramie, Wyoming, his dad was a third generation Wyoming cowboy, and would invite me up to work on the roundups and the brandings and all that. So I got really lucky in that my friends would invite me to you know, not just to hang out with them on the ranch, but to do the work on the ranch. Those of you who have ranches know that, you know, nobody just comes to a ranch and expects to just hang out.
Right.
you end up helping out, not just hanging out. So
yeah.
I just loved that work and being having the privilege to be able to do it.
Well, you bring that authenticity to your music. I mean, obviously you've been out there and have lived the life because you do bring that to your music, which is wonderful. So tell us about the connection with harmonica and cowboy music.
Yeah, you know, I have to go back again to the blues. And, you know, the harmonica, it was introduced to our, it was invented and introduced to our country, invented in the 1850s, and then introduced to our country in 1862. The first shipments of harmonicas were coming over from Germany, sent by Matthias Hohner, still the top manufacturer of harmonicas in the world, and also the company that endorses me as an artist. And they were selling for 10 cents when they came over. And that was the height of Western migration at that time. So a harmonica, a musical instrument, you were able to carry in a vest pocket. You can imagine the popularity of that. I mean, they weren't carrying, you know, even the guitars would be cumbersome if you're crossing the country.
Right.
And so, you know, certainly not pianos, too. So this little instrument that had such a great big sound and so versatile musically and you know, the vest pocket portability became hugely popular. And it became, the United States became the largest market for a harmonica.
Wow.
And then in the heyday of the cattle drives, which was from 1866 to 1890, the harmonica became the favorite instrument of the drovers, you know, the cowboys. And now you got to jump back to the Civil War. After the Civil War, when Lincoln emancipated people that were held in slavery, those fellows and women were handy with livestock, especially down in Texas. So as many as a third of the drovers, it's estimated as many as a third of the drovers back then hired on to be cowboys, because that's what they were, you know, already doing basically. And they were driving cows, you know, north to the northern markets. And so those guys weren't playing Gene Autry and Roy Rogers. that came much later. They were playing the same music that they had been playing on the plantations, which is the blues. And that music became, in my opinion, not just my opinion, historically, probably the most influential music to the cowboy was the blues, because the blues ended up influencing all American music. But when you mix, you know, the blues with Irish and Celtic and Scottish, you know, Scotch-Irish music, you get what's known as cowboy music. And I've had conversations with a lot of folks about that. And, you know, Don Edwards, you know, is a cowboy performer that's of that ilk, too. He mixes it in the blues. And so I find it, you know, sometimes people think it's unusual for what I do, the mixing bluesy with cowboy, and I find it to be completely natural. In fact, I would say it's more authentic to do it that way, because that was how it was done from the start.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people do it and don't realize they're doing it. You know, it's that a lot of people are playing a lot of blues in their music, not realizing that they are. Because blues isn't just one thing. It's you know, the genre is expansive and a lot of it is inherent in American music in general. So there you go. And then the harmonica now, you know, it's used to entertain around the campfires, you know, for the drovers at night. It's used to, you know, calm their nerves. And also calm the cows' nerves, you know, night herding songs. And,
right.
And it became a huge part of our history. I mean, Abraham Lincoln played the harmonica. It was traded with between settlers and Native Americans. It was played by Western figures like Wyatt Earp and Billy the Kid. They were, you know, reportedly harmonica players and enthusiasts. And it became I like to call it the little instrument that helped settle the West. I think more than any other instrument, you could say that because of the time it showed up and the portability, you know, again, because of the hardship of carrying stuff back then around with you and owning stuff, you know, a 10-cent harmonica in your vest pocket was a very popular thing.
That's wonderful. And I never really thought about it. I mean, I have always associated harmonica with cowboy music, but I never realized it was such a close tie, and the roots of it are amazing. And, I love history.
Yeah,
so thank you.
It was right there. Yeah. it was the right instrument right at the right time, you know,
timing is everything. Well, you know what's wonderful is not only do you play incredibly, you teach incredibly. My husband and I actually sit in on one of your teaching workshops that you have at various festivals and things, which, you know, thank you for doing that. And, I mean, you had a group of, like, 50 people actually playing a song by the end of that workshop. And well, you know, not badly. And so that
not only one song, but four songs.
Yes, I was very impressed. Yeah. Very, very impressed.
I advertise in my program that you'll learn your first song in 30 seconds, and I've never had somebody I couldn't teach that song in 30 seconds.
Wow.
And then by the end of the class, everybody's playing four. And again, I've never had anybody in the class. They always come to me and say, "Oh, you'll never be able to teach me. I'm musically hopeless." And the more musically hopeless they think they are, the easier it is for me to teach them, because that means that they're an open book. And so I can get people playing without exception four songs and entertain them and the first song in less than 30 seconds, all within an hour.
Wow.
So it's so much fun.
You can tell you're having fun. I mean, except that your classes, they are fun. So anybody out there that's ever around when Gary's doing one of his harmonica workshops, you certainly want to get involved in that, because even if you don't ever do anything with it again, it's just a really fun workshop to sit through. And you have taken that whole education aspect of the harmonica and elevated it to a whole new level when you actually take this into distressed areas and use it to help children find their self-esteem and to find their sense of accomplishment and to elevate children. And so tell us about HarmoniKids.
Okay, sure. But before I go there, I'd like to also talk about my education programs and then segue into HarmoniKids. It's the same time as I'm doing the workshops at festivals. I often will be hired to go out to the schools and when I'm playing at a cowboy gathering, and I've taught pretty much every major cowboy gathering I've taught in the schools, and I love doing it. It's so much fun. And, you know, for example, I taught 500 kids in Heber. I taught 1,000 kids at Santa Clarita 2 years in a row. And in Durango every year for the past 5 years, including this year, I've done outreach to the schools there. And it's so much fun because the kids learn to play, and they get to keep a real authentic Western instrument. And then after I teach them, I take that into a school assembly with the kids, you know, as my performers at one portion of the program, and then the kids perform for their peers. It's unbelievable that the kids get so excited about it and have so much fun. And they play, you know, a couple of Western songs for the rest of the school, and therefore engaging the rest of the school to show them that, hey, this isn't just for these old cowboys; it's for us too. We're engaged in this. We can do this. And I think that in school programs are so important in you know, music, because the music that we love and care about can get lost and even die if it's not carried on by the future, and the future is children. So I take that to heart, and my programs are designed to fascinate the kids and engage them and get them playing a real instrument rather than just entertaining them, which engages them only for the moment. But if you if you engage a kid by giving them an instrument and teach them to play on it and say, hey, this isn't just for us performers, it's for you too. And we want you to join in and carry on this tradition, then it's lifelong. And, you know, be carried on through the generations like it was for us. So that's my two cents on that. But going back to harmonic kids, this is how it all began with my teaching. I volunteered at a friend of mine played harmonica and piano, and he was the director of a hospital playroom for kids. And he invited me to come down to the playroom and play for the kids. And he had all these different companies donate instruments, and asked me to bring my harmonicas, and then all the kids would bang away on whatever they had—a piano or a guitar or maracas or, you know, some kind of instrument. He had all the drums and all that, and he'd had it, and it would be a very joyful racket. It was, you know, they weren't actually playing the instrument, but this was before music therapy was recognized as a field, and you know, the kids were just having fun blowing off steam. Musically, you know, so I thought, you know, the kids are always wanting to play my harmonicas when I show up, and you know, these were kids that were sick and I couldn't give them harmonicas, of course, that I touched. So I approached my endorser Honer and asked him if I could you know, acquire harmonicas for that purpose, and that's how Harmonic Kids was born. And I developed a method to teach, which is the same method I use to teach adults in the workshops I do at the festivals and also in the schools. But that's how my method was developed, by teaching kids with special needs. And to date, I've probably taught close to 100,000 kids around the world. I've been to places as far away as Indonesia, you know, North Sumatra after the tsunami disaster. And I've been to Haiti after the earthquake disaster 5 years ago. And I've taught kids in every conceivable challenging situation, from being incarcerated in a detention center to being in a cancer ward with terminal cancer, to being in a psychiatric ward, to being in, you know, any kind of special needs facility. I've been pretty much in every possible imaginable challenge. I've worked with kids, autism. In recent years, I taught a kid in a school program for the severely disabled, and he was both deaf and blind. Now you're asking, as I was asking, how am I going to teach that? How am I going to teach a kid who can't see or hear? Well, he learned to play by being engaged, by hearing my train song, which I think we're queued up to play next to it, heard the vibration from that and excited him. And then with some coaxing and showing him how to use my method, he found the same vibrations in order to make notes and ended up playing a song. Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't even know that was possible. Yeah. Yeah. So that's never, and it's taught me every time I go to these, I learn that never underestimate music, and especially in the hands of a child. It's never underestimate it. It's, you know, to me, just given me purpose for being here. And, you know, of course, as you know, as a fellow musician, our pride and joy is to write songs and get up on stage and play them in front of people. That is the most wonderful feeling on earth, and we are blessed to be able to do that and to make people happy that way. But the effect to me is heightened by being able to teach kids who are really challenged in this world, and you know, maybe help them out. And that's become even a stronger purpose for me, and a blessing for me. It's really improved my life.
I can see why. It's pretty doggone amazing. Wow. Well, bless you for doing that. I mean, it's who knows? I mean, you probably won't know until you get to heaven how many lives you've changed with this. You know, you just these are the kind
you never know.
Literally, you don't can put a kid on a completely different path.
Yeah, you know, it's basically you plant a seed and nurture it to grow. And then, you know, it's like Johnny Appleseed, then you move on and plant more. And,
that's right.
You know,
and let the Lord
can't be there for, that's a good way to put it. I can't be there for all those, thousands and thousands of kids that I teach. I can't be there to take it, further with them. But I don't see that as my purpose. My purpose is to introduce them to it and plant the seed. And in some cases, for example, in Haiti, I taught kids who were child slaves. So that harmonica may, and most likely was taken away from them by their owners after I left. And I'm not exaggerating here. That's legal in Haiti to be a child slave. It's a terrible part of their culture. And you ask maybe, well, then why do it? Well, that experience of playing music is something that no one can ever take away from them. It gives them self-esteem and self-confidence that you cannot take that away from a person once they have it. It's the same way that the blues survived from coming here from Africa by slaves, and they couldn't take that away, and it became not only did not take it away from them, it became the biggest part of American music, the most influential part of American music. So. You know, that's the power of music.
It really is. Oh, well, yeah, I'm ready for some more music.
I just want to say real quick, if people want to know more about Harmonic Kids, it's HARMONIKIDS, harmonickids.org. It is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. There are no salaries. All donations go to helping kids with special challenges. So you can check that on the website.
Great. I was going to talk about it at the end of the show, but no worries. We'll plug it right in. We'll touch on it again at the end just to make sure everybody got it. So before we go there, we're going to listen to, I think this is a little instrumental song of yours called Untrainable.
Yeah, that's the one that I play for pretty much everywhere I go, but the kids absolutely love it. There isn't a Harmonic Kids session that I've ever done where I didn't play it.
Well, great. Let's listen to Untrainable.
Thank you. That's actually an early version of the song. It's become even more elaborate than that. But
oh my gosh! Well, we have like more than run out of time, but I do want you to please tell people where they can find your music, and again, remind them where they can find out more information about Harmonikids, and hopefully help you out with that. So please tell us where you can find your music and hire you. Get in touch with you to hire you.
You bet.
You bet.
I would love to do that. I've got a duo project with Ian Espinosa called Allegretto Espinosa. So you can find my music there at allegrettoespinosa.com. Not an easy spelling, but it's actually spelled exactly like it sounds.
Okay.
You can also find my music. If you just look up Gary Allegretto and go to CD Baby, you can find all my albums there at cdbaby.com. Mm-hmm. And you can also go to GaryAllegretto.com, though it's not specific to cowboy music. You can find out information there about me. Then there's also information about Harmonikids at harmonikids.org, as I mentioned. And I think I spelled that out for you. And that's pretty much it.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Gary. It's been wonderful and enlightening, and it's been so much fun to get to know you better, and, you know, just wishing you all the best and huge success as you continue on with your career and all that you're doing. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Belinda. I sure appreciate you having me, and thank you for everything you do. I always enjoy seeing you whenever I get the opportunity, and I also I want to thank you for honoring the Granite Mountain 19, so much. And that means a lot to me. And, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You are quite welcome. And thank you again for being on the show. And we're going to close out the show. You're part of it with a wonderful old bluesy, by the way, cowboy song that we just all love called Navajo Trail.
Every day, along about evening, when the sunlight beginning to fail, I ride through the slumbering shadows along the Navajo Trail. When it's nighttime and the crickets are calling and the coyotes are making their wail, I dream by a smoldering fire along the Navajo Trail. Listen to the music of the wind strumming a sagebrush guitar, while over yonder the moon is climbing, and it always finds me wishing on a star. Well, what do you know?
Well, what do you know?
It's morning already.
Morning already.
And there's a dawn shining so silver and pale. It's time to climb on back of my saddle and ride that old Navajo Trail.
Oh, my. I love that song. Great, Gary. Oh, my gosh. What a wonderful and interesting life Gary has led and is still leading. I have a feeling there's still so much in his future. And not only has he identified his very special gift from our Lord, he has worked it, honed it, no pun intended, perfected it, and is now not only enjoying sharing it, but is using it to bless and enrich the lives of others, especially children and at-risk children and children that are facing huge challenges. And isn't that what we are all called to do? God's Word tells us in 1 Peter 4:10, as each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Now, I can imagine some of you may be thinking, oh, Belinda, I'm not gifted. I'm just an ordinary person. Well, I'm here to tell you that that could not be more wrong. The verse I just read said, each has received a gift. Not some, not those I have selected, but each. Now, as human beings, we tend to elevate gifts like music and art and science, gifts that are prominent and are easily demonstrated and recognized and celebrated. Those gifts are wonderful, and they're deserving of all the praise that they get. However, so is your gift. If you have even recognized your gift by now, you may think it's humble, maybe even lowly, but in God's reality, that couldn't be farther from the truth. God is the one that endowed you with your gift, so according to his will and his purpose for your life. And 1 Corinthians 12:4 tells us there are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. And in James 1:17, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. So you see, God sees all the gifts as equally beautiful and worthy because they are all from him. And in Romans 12:6 through 8, he takes it a step further and he tells us to use our gifts to their fullest. It reads, we have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is in serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, then do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. Do you see the wide variety of gifts? Do you recognize yourself anywhere in there? Are you a giver, an encourager, a teacher? I truly believe that anything you are good at is a gift to you by our Lord. Recognize it, cultivate it, perfect it. The Lord tells us in 1 Timothy, do not neglect your gift. You can't get much more direct than that. And that takes us back to our first scripture, 1 Peter 4:10. As each has received a gift, and here's the key point, just as Gary is doing, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's very grace. So please do not discount the gift the Lord has given you as less than. The Lord has a specific and definite plan for you in your life and has gifted you perfectly to carry it out. So I would encourage you to rejoice in the gifts you have been given. And if you have not already discovered it, figured out a way to use that gift or gifts to encourage, uplift, and serve one another. Well, that's our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us. Thank you for giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again to our very special guest, Gary Allegretto, for sharing a bit of himself with us today. And of course, a huge thank you to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. And please remember, all the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. You can even download our nifty mobile app and take us on the go with you. So if you like our shows, please help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today, and until next week, may all your trails be blessed.
Girl named Maria was walking to market one day. She stopped for rest by the roadside where a bird with a broken wing lay. A since passed till she saw it, for its feathers were covered with sand. But soon, clean and wrapped, it was traveling in the warmth of Maria's small hand. She happily gave her last peso on a cage made of rushes and twine. She fed it loose corn from the market as she watched it grow stronger with time. Now the Christmas Eve service was coming, and the church shone with tinsel and light, and all of the town folk brought presents to lay at the manger that night. They brought diamonds and incense and perfumes in packages fit for a king. But for one ragged bird in a small cage, Maria had nothing to bring. She waited till just before midnight, so no one would see her go in. Crying, she knelt by the manger, for her gift was unworthy of him. Spoke to her from the darkness, Maria, what brings you to me? If the bird in the cage is your offering, then open the door, let me see. Though trembling, she did as he asked her, and out of the cage the bird flew, soaring up into the rafters on a wing that had healed good as new. Just then the midnight bells rang out and the little bird started to sing a song that no words could recapture, whose beauty was fit for a king. Now Maria felt blessed just to listen to the cascade of notes sweet and long, as her offering was lifted to heaven by the very first nightingale's song.